Good afternoon. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. Beautiful day in Anchorage. What makes Anchorage special? What is, they used to call it Los Angeles North, but it's not really, because Anchorage has some very unusual qualities that other cities don't have. And of all of those qualities, surely it's our closeness to the wilderness that is the number one unique thing about Anchorage compared to other American cities. How many cities do you have a issue or a problem with moose and bear? You know, people being attacked by bears in city parks, moose wandering down the street, and everybody's got a moose story. Everybody's got a moose picture. One of my favorites is the picture that they had in the newspaper of a moose with Christmas lights on its antlers. You know, you can't get any better than that. So that's our topic today, urban wildlife. Many issues to talk about today. And my guest is Jesse Coltrane, who is the area biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, covers the municipality of Anchorage. Thanks for being with us, Jesse.
Sure.
All different parts of Alaska have an area biologist, and if you were in Kodiak or if you were out in the western Alaska somewhere, you would have some fairly traditional activities for a biologist. But you, your biological work includes Homo sapiens, or people, as well, it seems. And a lot of your work is dealing with human-animal-wildlife conflicts.
Yeah, that's correct. As the area biologist for Game Management Unit 14C, which encompasses the entire municipality of Anchorage, which stretches from all the way from Kinnick all the way down to 20 miles, so just not bigger than the Anchorage Bowl. So I deal with all of the traditional things that other area biologists do in their area, managing the wildlife populations for sustained yield and sustained for both non-consumptive and consumptive users. But in addition, because in Anchorage, we're very unique in the sense that we have most of the people in the state live here, or a large percentage of the people in the state live here, and we do have very healthy wildlife populations, including potentially dangerous wildlife populations such as moose and bears and wolves. So we do tend to have our bit of conflict at times, and so I also have to deal with that as well.
So I'm just curious about your day. I mean, you're dealing with regulations and you're dealing with managing wildlife issues, but then the phone rings and on your voicemail, I noticed when I called your office, it's like, if this is a wildlife emergency, call my cell phone. So that kind of thing could happen to you like any time and you need to run out and deal with something?
Pretty much. I kind of measure the year by what the wildlife conflict of the weeks are, you know.
Yeah.
So different seasons produce different conflicts. And right now is a relatively slow time of year for me. Most of our calls are related to moose. And this year's actually been really peaceful and quiet.
Oh, really? Good.
We do have moose that get injured through vehicle collisions, or occasionally they just slip on the ice or twist a leg in deep snow. So we get calls about that. We also get common calls right now is people see moose laying on a frozen pond and they think they're stuck because they can't see their legs. So we get a lot of those kind of calls. There's just a few that roll in now. But mostly in the winter, we're dealing with more regulatory things. Like we're preparing right now for the Board of Game meeting that'll be taking place in Kenai in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, my perception is that at this time of year, the moose are touchier and more dangerous than they are in the summertime, and I base that on just the idea that maybe they're more stressed or they're trying to make it through the winter. And I know I've been chased by moose more sort of in the late winter than other times. Is that a correct perception?
Well, in the late winter, moose are definitely nutritionally stressed, so they can be a little cranky. But actually, in reality, the most dangerous time of year for moose, especially when you're talking about human conflict, is during the spring calving. So peak calving is about the 20th of May and extends into about the middle of June. And during that time period is when we have our most aggressive encounters of moose and people, and it's cows protecting their newborn calves, mostly to people that, you know, stumbled upon them by accident.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the time of year where it is a little nerve-wracking as the area biologist, because you have a lot of people out recreating in areas where moose are calving or calves or moose that drop calves in people's yards. And so that does pose the highest safety risk for moose, I'd say, for the entire year.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot to talk about, and I'm pretty sure our listeners are going to have questions and comments on this topic. If you want to get on the air and have any questions for area biologist Jesse Coltrane, please call us at 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, I don't actually have that number handy, but I'm sure I will get it soon. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. You'd think after 3 years I would have memorized these numbers, but for some reason I don't. And there's information on the web too. If you go to alaskapublic.org and look for urban wildlife, we've put up a page there which has some really valuable links to pages that the Department of Fish and Game has put up with on living with moose, living with bear, including videos that help you learn about how to be safe. And it's not only about people being safe, it's about the animals being safe as well. And I know, you know, my experience is somebody spends a lot of time outdoors in West Anchorage is on the coastal trail. You were talking about moose calving. And, you know, last spring I was seeing, you know, there's a moose that is calved and there's just a brand new calf there, you know, by chance. They're 20 feet off the trail. Big group of people is gathering. People are zooming by at high speed or sneaking up to take pictures, and that can't be good for the moose. And it's dangerous for the people as well, I suppose.
Yeah, it does put an undue amount of stress on the moose, but most importantly, it is, you know, it is a dangerous activity to sneak up on a cow moose with a newborn calf. We definitely don't recommend it. And we do see that curiosity, you know, killed the cat, and it does get people into trouble, especially with the onslaught of iPhones. I've noticed even more so now with moose and bears. A bear shows up in town, or there's a cow with a calf, and people have an automatic camera because they have a smartphone with them. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have a very good zoom lens.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They got to get a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And that not only stresses the animals out, but it can put that person into a situation where they could be injured by that animal by getting too close and putting extra stress on them.
And I think people think moose are totally docile because they look like almost like a farm animal, you know, and they like remind you a little bit of a cow or something. But they can really, when they get mad and they start swinging at you with those hooves, they can kill you.
Yeah, more people are injured by moose, and more people have been killed by moose than anyone is by bears in Anchorage. You know, we have a handful of people that are injured by moose every year, typically during spring calving. And that the range of injuries can be from pretty minor to, you know, bruising to severe head injuries. And to even, you know, we've had a couple of unfortunate events where people have been killed and related to, you know, cows and calves mm-hmm. primarily. So yes, moose are large animals with very sharp hooves and they can literally kick in all directions at the same time. And in my dealings with moose, when I go out and deal with a bear, when I go out and deal with a moose, dealing with moose is always a little more nerve-wracking. The danger level is always just a little bit higher, it seems. So mm-hmm. they are definitely animals to give them a wide berth and respect their personal space.
When you're looking at a moose, are there clues as to whether that moose is stressed and maybe going to go after somebody as opposed to one that's sort of just minding its own business?
Yeah, you know, the thing with moose is they can turn on a dime. They can be completely fine and they can turn to be stressed very quickly. But they do typically give you a few cues. And one of the things that you usually look for, the first thing they usually do is put their ears back. You know, if they're looking at you and they got their ears back, you need to be moving the other direction. And then they can lick their lips. They'll go through a whole gamut of things, but they can go from ear back to charging. So it's not like they go from ear backs to licking their mm-hmm. lips to I'm thinking about charging and charging you. They can go from look at you to put their ears back to charge. So your best safety tip to remember when dealing with moose is treat each one as they have a giant space bubble. They don't want you in it, and to give them a lot of space. Give them more space than you think you have to. It doesn't matter what they're doing. Just give them a lot of space.
They can move amazingly fast.
They can move a lot faster than you can.
Yeah.
I mean, especially right now. You think about this deep snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, their legs are longer than mine, and they got four of them.
Yeah, right.
So
let's go to a call. Louise is calling from Anchorage. Louise?
Hi. I have been very upset for a long time about the precedence that the city and the state and the wildlife people give to the so-called rights of these big, dangerous animals in the city. You know, if I were a wildlife expert from Mars doing initial observation on the fauna on Earth, I would probably remark that humans' natural habitat is large, nearly monospecies colonies with very limited tolerance for other species. And, you know, to put these big, dangerous, short-tempered, mean animals in places where there are children, where there are pets, where there are people who need to go places, just because it's cool, just, I have to scratch my head about it. It seems to me to be a very, very stupid decision on the part of both the city and the part of the wildlife management people.
Well, when you say put them there, what do you mean? Like, I mean, nobody put them there, right? They were just already there.
Somebody made the decision to allow them to be here.
Well, how? But you'd have to. You mean? I'm just clarifying what it is you think they should do. Should they put a fence around the
frankly,
city?
Or? I'd like to see them pick up every gosh darn one of them and take them out in the countryside. It's not like there's no other Alaska for them to be in. It's not like the occasional bald eagle or falcon that nests in the middle of Chicago or New York. We have lots and lots and lots of empty space for these animals, and humans use really a very little part of the space that is Alaska.
Okay, well, let's get our Jesse Coltrane area biologist to respond to that. Is it? What is the state's policy in terms of keeping humans and wildlife apart? Is there any more that you could be doing, or that you've made a decision that we want wildlife in Anchorage? What's the sort of the general policy?
I guess, you know, the general policy is we're managing them as populations. So, and I'm assuming that the caller is specifically speaking towards bears and moose. That's typically the wildlife species that do most often cause public safety concern. So we manage them on a population level. The animals that we see in town, many of them are the animals that we see in the park. They're the same animals. The populations are...
So they wander in and out.
Yeah, they wander in and out. Not all of them, but a lot of them do. And so we do manage the populations through regulated harvest. So that is a way that we control population numbers, and we provide a hunting opportunity for people who enjoy hunting. And then also, we really take a look at individual animals that cause conflicts within town. So if we have an individual bear, let's say, that has been repeatedly in a neighborhood and behaviorally we feel that it's posing an additional threat to public safety, then we do go in and remove that bear lethally. Same thing with moose. If we have a moose that's, you know, aggressively, you know, showing aggressive behavior towards people repeatedly, then we go in and we do, you know, put down that moose. If a lot of times in the winter, one thing we end up having to do is put down moose that have been fed by people. But it is kind of a balancing act because, you know, like you mentioned before, Anchorage is very unique that we do have these large populations and healthy populations of large wild animals. But we've conducted several public opinion surveys, and not everybody's opinion is the same. But what we found is that the majority of people in Anchorage are really proud of the wildlife that we have, that it makes us unique. It sets us apart from places like L.A., although L.A.'s got mountain lions now. you know, so it does something that is actually enriches our life here. But it is a balancing act. It's a balancing act between having these animals here, but also trying to manage the public safety concern that they do pose, and some do pose a higher threat than others. And you know what we do is we address those each individuals on an individual basis, and that's something that we've looked at as well in some of our opinion surveys. And that management technique is actually relatively supported, greater support, instead of like culling populations, but actually dealing with individual animals that cause individual problems on an individual basis.
Great, Louise.
May I continue?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The sentiment that they were here first rankles me, but she didn't bring that up, so I'm not going to pursue that. I like to keep a nice garden. I grow a lot of vegetables. In Anchorage, I'm not allowed to put a fence high enough to keep moose out of my garden. I have to keep a 4-foot fence in the front, and I can put a 6-foot fence in the back. But a moose can step over a 4-foot fence, and in the wintertime, they can step over a 6-foot fence if there's any amount of snow. And I feel like, the city is complicit in what is basically vandalism by big animals that ought to be out in the woods somewhere.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call, Louise. We're going to go to Ron now, who's calling from Anchorage. Ron?
Thank you. Ms. Coltrane, I wonder if you could tell us, is there any difference between sustained yield of predators and sustained yield of prey? Is the definition the same? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. But could you clarify what's the purpose of the question exactly? What do you have in mind?
Ms. Coltrane used the term sustained yield at the beginning of the program, and I'd like to know what she meant by that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I was a little flustered at the beginning, and what I was trying to get through was that we're managing the populations for both consumptive and non-consumptive use. But you speak of, when we look at what we can harvestable surplus and what we can harvest from different species, and it depends on, there's a lot of different factors that go in on how much we can, how much we can sustainably harvest from different species. I think that's kind of what you're getting at, Ron. But so say for wolves, for instance, that's a predator. And typically we say about a 35% harvest is a sustained harvest for wolf population. So it really depends on the species. Bears, we have, the thinking used to be 5 to 8% was about what we could sustain for a harvest without changing the level of population growth in a bear population. And now we're thinking, yeah, we can probably, like black bears can definitely handle a higher harvest rate than that. And maybe some brown bears as well. So it just really varies on the species. Prey populations, they can handle large percentages of harvest as well. So it just depends on what the species is.
But there's no hunting in the urbanized part of Anchorage. So when you're talking about the managing these populations, you're managing them, in the park. And then as those populations go down, maybe you're thinking that animals will migrate out of the city? Or how does that work? Or is it the animals that are in the city are just in and they're safe, except from cars?
Yeah. So I guess, are you talking about bears and moose?
In terms of bears and moose.
Bears,
right,
and moose. Yeah. Okay. So most of the areas that we have, all the areas that we have open for bear hunting are primarily outside of the Anchorage Bowl and the developed areas of Eagle River. And so most of all the rest of 14C is open for bear hunting for both black bears is pretty much everywhere. And brown bears, it's a little more limited, but it's still pretty pervasive. The remainder of 14C is open for general harvest. And then Chugach State Park management area is open by a drawing permit as well as a Klutna management area. So some of those animals they're not just in those little areas.
Yeah.
They move larger areas. So bears that we have in town often move into these hunting areas that are open for hunting, and they're susceptible to harvest pressure. Not all of them do, but some of them definitely do. We're trying to get at what is the percentage of that as well right now with movement studies.
I guess what I'm getting at is that in terms of how many animals we want to have in sort of the urbanized area, you don't really have a real control tool over that. Because you don't have a hunt where the urbanized part of the city is, but do you have an ability to control it somewhat by having a hunt, in the state park or elsewhere?
On some level, yes, on some level, moose are kind of a difficult situation because we do have moose that are pretty resident to the Anchorage Bowl, and we have. We have some hunts like the Anchorage upper, the Front Range of the Chugach State Park and the Campbell Creek area, where we do hold a cow hunt to try to get at some of the issues that we have in town. But holding a hunt for moose in a highly developed urban area or other species is problematic for social reasons and safety reasons.
Yeah.
We do have areas of large municipal parklands and stuff that do harbor and support numbers of moose and things that they go in and out, they're not there all the time, but and bears as well. But getting at having hunts in those areas, that's a different story. So yeah, we try to, where we can have hunts, we pretty much have exhausted a lot of the areas where we have hunting opportunity already, outside of municipal parks. So yeah.
All right. I'm talking with Jesse Coltrane. My name is Charles Wolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. Jesse is the area biologist for Anchorage, deals with all these moose that, at least in my part of town, sometimes you get up in the morning and there's a moose on the front porch, and it's can be quite inconvenient. The kids run into them on the way to the bus stop. So they can be inconvenient. They can also be spectacular. And in the summertime, you'll see them surrounded by tourists just who are so excited by it. So that's our topic today. And I know there are many opinions out there. If you have a question or a comment that you want to get on the air, the number here is 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, there's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And our email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And when those come in, I try to read them on the air. We've got a ton of information available for you on alaskapublic.org. Just scroll down and look for urban wildlife and click on that. And there's some good links there for learning more about our topic. And now I'd like to go to Sylvia, who's calling from Anchorage. Sylvia?
Yes. I have a comment and then also a question. The comment is that I am so thrilled to live in a place where we do have wildlife that comes into your yard. That's one of the reasons we purchased a house in the area that we did, is because we have the moose that come through and even bears. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people who want to raise children here to educate them as Alaskan children, not as California children, where there is not quite as much wildlife right in the main parts of the city. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. There are so many places that people could live that do not have the opportunity to have these wonderful animals around that you do have to be educated about. But there are so many other places. I'm not quite sure why people want to live here who don't want to have wildlife around. The question that I had has to do with we have a lot of outdoor activities like races, bicycle races, and different things at different times. And I've often seen, there was one race some time ago where they had people going in the wee hours in the morning on bicycles next to a salmon stream at a time that bears were in the area. And then they wonder why there are problems, you know, with the bears. And what can we do to have our officials educate themselves, you know, with the wildlife and, you know, what to do? You know, what to do if you have half a brain. So as far as planning these races, what can we do to educate the officials for that?
Thanks, Cynthia. That was a horrible and terribly unfortunate event that happened back in 2008, which you're referring to. And I think we've learned a lot of lessons from it. Since then, and even before then, we work very closely with the Parks and Rec Department, and we have a very good working relationship with the municipal Parks and Rec folks. And after 2008 incident where we did have a mauling, they've worked with us even closer to try to ensure that that type of event doesn't happen. If there's events that they have concerns about, or if there's a potential wildlife conflict, they don't hesitate to call me and ask me about it. And so it was horrible and it was awful, and nobody wants to see something like that repeated. Because of it, I think it's opened a line of communication between Fishing Game and Parks and Rec Department to try to avoid having that type of situation happen again.
Yeah. Thanks, Sylvia. Good question. You know, it raises for me the fact that I think there's more and more use of the parks, the Camel Track by Centennial Park and Kincaid. We've just had these single track bike trails built at Kincaid, which I can say from experience are super, super fun. But you actually run into moose a lot more because the sight lines are much shorter, and you come around a corner and there they are. And I think there have been some incidents with people having, I don't know the details, but people having some close encounters with moose there. I don't know what the solution to that is. I don't know if you have thoughts on it. Maybe it's just a matter of people being more careful and aware, or maybe it's just something we have to deal with.
Yeah, each situation is different. Mm-hmm. And we've gone to great lengths, the department, through Elizabeth Manning, primarily our bear education or wildlife education specialist, and she has formed a group that deals primarily with wildlife education and bear education, especially for recreationalists, and trying to get the message out there on how things that, you know, you need to be aware of. We have this great resource and these great parks, and everybody wants to get out there and enjoy them, and we would love that, but there's ways to conduct yourself safer than others. The single track trails that we're building in Kincaid are a great resource for the community. They did cause some serious issues last spring because they were built in the fall through areas that were traditional calving areas.
Okay.
And then in the spring, you know, the moose are calving, same place they've always calved, but now there are these single track trails through and lots of bikers.
Were anybody hurt in that situation?
There were quite a number of people that were injured, none seriously. But I think we had up to 3 to 5 different groups just over Memorial Weekend that got, you know, had bad encounters with moose right in the peak of calving. So we've been trying to work with the bike groups to recommend that during that time period, during calving from, you know, late May through about mid to late June, that, you know, we have lots of trails in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
Pick another one.
Yeah, just put up some signs and say, this is not a good time to be biking.
Yeah, it's not a good time to use those trails. Use the wide trails in Kincaid for a couple of weeks. Enjoy those. You have better sight visibility or, you mm-hmm. know, but the single track trails, what makes them so fun and is that they're twisty and turny, and it makes them really scary from a wildlife perspective because you turn the corner and there's the moose.
It's happened to me.
Yeah, and you have no reaction time.
Mm-hmm.
And the moose has a quicker reaction time than you do.
Yeah.
And the same has happened with bears on the trails as well. So.
Right. Well, I know the junior Nordic groups will teach the kids, they'll have moose drills and say, okay, moose drill, and all the kids scatter and hide behind a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good defensive posture to sort of find a tree and get behind it? Or, I mean, this huge animal that's much faster than you are, if you're already in the situation where maybe you've surprised it, it's coming after you, what should you do?
Typically with moose, because they're not coming after you because they're predators, they're coming mm-hmm. after you because you've invaded their space. And so what you want to do is get out of their space. So make as much distance between you and the moose. And if you can run away safely, run away. If you can't run away, if there's not enough time or the moose is gaining on you, get behind something like a tree, or if you can get under a vehicle if you're in the street or something like that, you know, something to protect yourself. Getting behind a tree is a good recommendation, especially mm-hmm. for kids, because they may not be able to run very far, but they can, you know, at least put something between them mm-hmm. and hooves.
And kind of get small. Yeah, so the moose is going to come at you forwards with its hooves, unlike a horse that would kick from the back.
Yeah, they usually strike out with their front legs. I mean, they can kick from the back too, mm-hmm. but, you know, if they're coming at you, they're going to strike with their front legs.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller from Mark. Mark, did you have a question or a comment?
No, just had a comment. Hi, Charles. Hi, Jesse. Just kind of a shout out to wildlife in Anchorage. I had the lucky fortune 3 years ago of during my morning coffee seeing a cow moose with a hoof sticking out of her rear end, and so I knew it was coming. So I got my camera, and she proceeded over the next 2 hours to give birth right there on the lawn in, you know, 12 feet from my window, cleaned up the afterbirth, licked the calf. The calf got up, took its first walk, did its first suckling, all while I got to sit there and watch and photograph it. Incredibly special experience. I threw up, and then the kind of funny part is I threw the photos up on my Flickr site and sent an email off to my, you know, 20 or 30 closest friends, just saying, hey, look what happened this morning. This is really cool. They, of course, sent it to their friends, and they sent it to their friends. It ended up getting about 1 million views. And I had emails from moose biologists in Canada and Sweden asking if they could use the photos in their classes. The one comment that stuck in my mind was a moose biologist said, I've been studying moose for 25 years. I've never seen anything like this, you know. So that's the unique thing about Anchorage that I really love living here.
Yeah, that is very, very cool. Great story. So what part of town do you live in?
Lower Hillside, just off Huffman Road, and live on a large wooded lot.
Mm-hmm.
The maybe another interesting, and maybe this is a question for Jesse, about every second or third year, we see a cow that we've got to recognize, and she brings her usual pair of calves, you know, in the spring, and so we've seen her off and on during the years, and this cow that I saw 3 years ago looked like a young one, and she only had one calf, and I was of the impression that it was maybe a first time mom, and then I got thinking, gee, I wonder if that was a calf that you know was brought here and kind of got this area imprinted or knew it as a safe place and came back to give birth to her calf. And just a fantasy on my part, but I was wondering what Jesse would think of that.
Well, it's hard saying not knowing. It is possible because they do learn from their parents or their mothers. So it is possible, but you know, I wouldn't be able to say definitively one way or another. But definitely, you know, cows do very often come back to the same place to give birth or the near vicinity, and especially in a place like Anchorage where they found a safety, you know, a safe little lot or something. Especially if you live on a wooded area, a large wooded lot, that may be kind of a refugia for them from the hustle and bustle of city life and a safe calving place. So it is very common that moose will come back and use the same areas, and people will see the same moose from year to year.
Mm-hmm. Neat. Say, Mark, where could we find your video or your pictures on Flickr?
I'll send them to your email address.
Sure, that'd be great. We'll put it up on our website. And
Okay. So
great call. Thanks so much for getting with us. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. When we come back in just a minute, I'm going to give the phone numbers, and we'll have another half hour with Jesse Coltrane talking about moose in Anchorage, urban wildlife. So stay with us on KSKA Anchorage.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Jesse Coltrane from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She's the area biologist who is responsible for the wildlife in the municipality and the wildlife-human interactions. And there's tons to talk about, and I'm sure you probably have your own questions. The number here, if you'd like to ask a question, is 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. We've been talking a lot about moose, and we haven't been talking so much about bear. Is the perception correct that there are more bear around or more bear conflicts than there used to be, or are we maybe paying more attention to them? What's your sense of sort of the trend of this issue of human bear conflict?
I would say that, yes, we probably have more conflict than we used to in some ways. And we're constantly battling the conflict. And it kind of goes up and down. And this has always been how it is. We'll have a year of high conflict, and then it will be a year of low conflict. And then it just kind of fluctuates. Last year was a year of high conflict. It was pretty moderate throughout the summer, but we did have, for black bears, but for brown bears, it was a year of high conflict. You know, as to what the population's doing, with our black bears, we can kind of see through our harvest, when our population kind of goes up and down through our harvest. We don't actually have counts on black bears or brown bears within the 14C. We've never done any type of actually survey of those animals. With brown bears, because we don't harvest many and we don't have a very high human-caused mortality rate for them, we don't really have a good measure. We tend to have every couple of years a bunch of three-year-olds or two-year-olds that are getting kicked loose, it causes a lot of problems. And mm-hmm. then it's very forefront. But I do know that we have a lot more people. And, you know, while we are constantly trying to educate folks on how to reduce their conflicts by, you know, proper garbage storage, chickens are a new big and up-and-coming thing around here that has caused, precipitated a lot of bear conflicts throughout the municipality in the last couple of years as well. So, you know, we constantly are fighting this battle of balance between growing human population and managing the bears that we have. And are the bears growing? That's anybody's guess there.
Now there's there are a few brown bear along sort of the creeks in Chester Creek or Campbell Creek in the summertime, I guess. And but probably not very many, as I understand it. Most of the bears in the city are black bears. And black bears, I mean, most of the time they don't attack people, right? So what is the, you know, what kinds of reasons would somebody have to shoot one? Do you have dangerous black bears that are going after garbage? And what are the profiles of that bear?
Mm-hmm. You know, about every year, every other year, we have, there will be a black bear that I worry that individual bear has crossed a behavioral line and could pose a serious threat to people. What happens is they come into the neighborhoods because we have unsecured trash, or hang around our houses because we have unsecured trash or chicken coops or bird feeders or pet food outside, you know, attractants around our houses. So the more they hang around, the higher the probability is that somebody's going to accidentally stumble upon one. Now, when you surprise a black bear, they typically go away. But every once in a while, we will see a black bear that begins to kind of own a neighborhood. You know, you can't chase it off. You can't do anything. And that bear, you know, I definitely start to worry about, well, what's it going to do if it encounters a small, you know, somebody who's small or if somebody challenges it or, you know. And those are bears that we usually target to take out lethally.
But that would be a small percentage of the bears that actually are killed each summer. You know, most of them are homeowners who are scared or in some kind of a conflict.
The other issues that we, you know, that do precipitate the defense of life and property kills by homeowners is, you know, pretty much every year we have a bear that learns how to break into houses.
Right.
We don't like to tolerate that. Usually that animal gets killed by either APD or a homeowner because they're the first on the scene. Then
there's a bear in somebody's house.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of no-brainer. What are you going to do with that bear? And we don't want to tolerate that. Once they learn how to do it, they're just going to do it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
There are other instances where, you know, people feel threatened. And if they are feeling threatened, for whatever reason, it's within their right to be able to dispatch an animal, dispense a life and property.
All right. Jordan has a comment from Anchorage. Jordan?
Hi, thank you for having me on. When I was younger, I played softball for a few seasons, and every year around the same time, like you guys said, we would see a mama moose with her children. But these children were albinos, and there was always two of them. And for the three seasons that I played, we saw them every year. And my coach said that as long as he'd been there, he'd been seeing them as well. But I've lived here my whole life, and I've never seen an adult albino moose. So,
me neither.
I've seen babies, though.
Huh.
Is that like?
Yeah, I don't know.
Albino or maybe.
Well, I mean, I'm
else.
Sure if they're white, they're gonna be, but I don't know if they're, you know, if their mortality rates are higher due to, you know, higher instances of predation or I couldn't answer that question as to where do the adults go. But I have seen photographs of adult albino moose.
There's one that's been in the newspaper a few times up in the Delta area.
Yeah, I've never seen one in the Anchorage area.
Okay. Sorry, we don't have an answer for that one, Jordan.
Thank you.
All right. I've also noticed that there are certain moose who stick in a very confined area. And in fact, in our neighborhood in Turnagain, the kids have named the different moose because they're so reliably in the same place all the time. You know, they have, you know, one is brown butt and one is something else. And there was a moose that hung out next to a certain trail in Kincaid Park for a whole winter. It was always in the same place. Is that normal for moose to just choose a very small area like that and just stay there? I always thought they would be more moving around more.
There is some research currently going on about looking at home range and movements of moose in and around the Anchorage area, primarily around the military base and getting at those. But we did some collaring back in the early 2000s and of cow moose in actual Anchorage, and just a cursory look of the location data, we had some moose that were very resident to areas and some moose that would make big treks like up to the hillside and then come back a week later. Mm-hmm. You know, so it could be both. It could be that, you know, you're just having to be kind of in a core area of their home range and they have a relatively small home range, especially or that they're moving more than you actually realize.
And you're just running into them again and again. Sure. Yeah. Let's go to Catherine from Anchorage talking about births of moose. Catherine?
Yes, my daughter and I have a question. When we see the moose with their young, we usually see them with twins. Is that normal for moose? And if so, is that normal throughout, like, the population of all deer?
It's definitely normal through moose, and it varies among different deer species. But it's usually nutritionally driven, you know, how good of we call it twinning rate. So, you know, what's a twinning rate shows kind of as a reflection on, you know, how good the population nutritionally is doing. But also, you know, we do have quite a few twins moose in town. And I think there's probably more than we initially see. They do get separated. I have even seen several groups of triplets in town as well.
Right, right. Okay, well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you. We've got certainly a lot of comments and questions. Here's an email. How much contact does your wonderful guest have with training in and about the school district to teach young Alaskans about the risks of urban wildlife?
I used to do more education within the schools until we hired our ACE education specialist, Elizabeth Manning. And she has really been the one to take over all the education in schools. And she reaches, I think, you know, over, you know, it's in the thousands of kids every year for both bear and moose safety. And then we also have another Brenda Duty, who runs our project. She's our Project Wild coordinator, and she goes into the schools to teach the Project Wild curriculum that the teachers then teach to the children to, you know, learn about different wildlife species and getting kids outdoors. And she's really into both Elizabeth and Brenda are their program is not only about wildlife safety, but getting kids outdoors to enjoy wildlife and learn about the natural world.
So a teacher could call the office there on Raspberry Road, the Fish and Game Department, and ask for somebody to help them out with curriculum or to come in?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then also we...
There's good stuff on the website, too.
Yeah. And then we also have a non-game biologist, Marion Snively, who does a lot of work with non-game species, primarily bats and frogs. And she goes into the schools a ton and gives lots of educational seminars to all the kids, you know, all different ages, and about bats and frogs, wood frogs in Alaska.
All right. It's Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Jesse Coltrane, area biologist. We're talking about urban wildlife. We've mostly been stuck on moose today, which is great. Lots of good questions and many more to go through here. Next, I'd like to bring Scott on the air from Anchorage. Scott?
Hello. I'm enjoying your show today.
Great. So am I.
Yeah, my question... Well, good. My question is mainly about a dog. My dog in particular. Moose and dog do not mix, by the way, if anybody's wondering.
Agreed.
I love my dog, and the last thing I'd want is for a moose to kill my dog. So I guess my question is, first I have a question, then I have kind of my solution to the problem. Where I live, I don't have a fenced yard. My neighbors do. The moose, I'm by Bicentennial Park. The moose use my yard to get from one neighborhood to the other. They're always going through my yard. My dog is on a zip line, a drop line. I let the dog out. It goes out. It has so much room to run back and forth in the yard, and then it's back in the house. It's really a house dog anyway. But I found, matter of fact, it was last winter, I hear the dog barking. I look out my window, and there's the dog and the moose, and they are going around in circles. And I'm thinking, that's it. That moose is going to kill my dog. The dog managed to get away. The moose ran off. Everything was fine. But then I had to make a choice at that point is, do I value my dog over the life of a moose in my backyard? So I made the decision that I'm a hunter. I have the capability to kill a moose if I have to. I don't want to kill a moose in my backyard. My question is, if a moose is trying to kill my dog, and I feel that I have to save my dog's life by killing a moose, is that defense of life and property?
Yes. Right. Your short answer is yes.
Please don't get in the situation.
Yeah,
but go ahead, Jesse.
You know, I guess the big thing would be, you know, try to avoid this situation. And unfortunately, you got the worst situation going on where you have an open backyard that's, you know, a good pass through for moose and probably a nice spot for them and a zip line. So your dog is kind of tied. So it if it's out there and it has an issue, it's going to be hard for it to get away.
She's pretty smart, you know, and we look for moose when we go in the backyard, but she's a dog, you know, she wants to go after the moose. The decision that I made was I love my dog, and I'd be willing to kill a moose if I had to, but I'm not willing to put my neighbors in danger by firing a high-powered rifle in my backyard. There are other houses close by, and I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't sacrifice the safety of my neighbors for my dog. So the decision that I came to was I loaded a double-barrel shotgun with sandbags, shotgun-propelled little sandbags. They make these cartridges. So my thought is if that situation arises again, and it hasn't, fortunately, I would lay a sandbag into the back end of the moose. And do you think that would encourage the moose to then run off?
See, I think just an air horn will get a moose to run off most of the time. But
you
Jesse?
Know, it just depends on the situation. Moose sometimes almost always do everything you think they wouldn't. but yes, you know, it could be enough to make the moose run away, or sometimes it could be enough to agitate the moose more.
Right.
It's just hard to say. And it depends on the individual moose, and it depends on how agitated it is to begin with, and what's going on. So
it might work, might not.
Yeah,
better than nothing.
Yeah.
Huh? All right. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much.
We have an email kind of on the same topic. What is recommended for dog walkers when they encounter a moose? And I guess there's a situation where the dog's on leash or the dog's not on leash. Mm-hmm. Advice?
Well, you know, if you're walking with your dog on a leash and you encounter a moose, I would say go back the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Or go way around it in the woods or take another trail. I think a lot of people get in trouble by pushing a little too close to moose. So they're walking and there's a moose in the way and they have this destination in mind without the flexibility to alter their destination. And they go, well, I can just squeeze by here because I squeezed by that last moose. Well, each moose has its own space issue. And you don't know what it is, and it changes. And you don't know what happened to that moose 10 minutes beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's best not to risk it. You know, it would... I see this happening, especially along the coastal trail.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big place where people will push it with both bears and moose because they've got a destination in mind. You know, they're going to go from...
And it might be a long way back to go the other
way. It might be a long way back, but it's always safest.
Right.
You know, the safest route usually isn't the convenient one.
That's right.
So you may be inconvenienced for a little bit, but definitely go around.
And more with the dog than if you're just... cycling or something, because a dog is going to create conflict.
Well, dogs do tend to create conflict with moose. If you look at it from a moose perspective, a dog is just a wolf, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of moose in town see lots of dogs. That doesn't mean they like them or are used to them. And so definitely if you have a dog, you're a little more of a target than if you don't.
Mm-hmm. So we heard earlier from a caller who talked about these amazing photos that he took of a moose being born right outside his backyard, and we've now got those pictures posted on our website, and they are truly amazing pictures. There's a whole series there, and as he said, he has almost a million views. So if you want to look at those, go to alaskapublic.org, look for urban wildlife, click on that, and then go down to the links, and you'll see a link to that Flickr account with the pictures of the moose birth. Amazing pictures, really, really quite close and vivid. Jesse's looking at him right now. You've probably seen that lots of times, eh?
Only once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Neat. All right, so let's go to Caroline, who's calling from Anchorage. Caroline?
you so much for this wonderful show and for the knowledgeable guests you have today. One of the things, and you've touched on so many elements of what I was, the question that I had in the last 5 minutes, it has to do with people having misconceptions. I don't think anyone would tease a bear, but I remember some college students on the UAA campus that were teasing a moose, and the unfortunate action that generated on the part of the moose was to attack a gentleman that had nothing to do with it. If I remember, he was not elderly, but he was from Korea, I believe, and did not know what was really happening, and he was stomped to death by the moose. But it was in reaction, from what the assessment was, to the college students teasing that bear. Now, I'm sure moose run a lot faster than most people think they can. So they were at a distance, and I'm sure they felt safe in what they were doing. But the educational aspect of what you're able to do, it sounds to me as if with park people, you're able to get through to them because they know they are in the wild. But a lot of folks here, we don't think we're in the wild, or we don't want to think that we're in the wild. But, of course, houses were built here long after moose roamed the area. So, again, it's a question of how much education can you give people to help them not do dumb things.
Yeah, well, that's asking a lot of one person with one assistant. But thanks, Caroline. It's a good point.
Yeah, you know, we do spend a lot of effort trying to educate people, but there is some level of personal responsibility that has to take place mm-hmm. as well, and absorbing what we say and what the educational messages that we try to get out there. And you're absolutely right. I get calls from people who say, oh, there's a moose in my backyard, and I want to let my dog out, and what should I do? Can I throw rocks at it? Can I do this? Can I do that? And I say, look, when you want that moose to move, the way to get it to move is to make it angry and then uncomfortable, and then it will leave. But once you start doing that, you're taking responsibility. You better take responsibility for your actions, because now that moose is agitated, and there's a very good chance a calm moose can become an agitated moose and walk out and go two houses down, and some unsuspecting person who didn't know that, somebody else just threw rocks at it, you could encounter this moose and have a negative encounter. And so you need to think about how your actions do, when you're dealing with wildlife, potentially affect other people. And that's something that my assistant and I, Dave and I, take into consideration every time we're dealing with wildlife in town. Do we push this moose? Do we push this bear? What's around us? Who may this affect other than just us and the bear? Because there's a big community out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We just have about 5 minutes left. The number here is 550-8433. We're talking with Jesse Coltrane, who is the area biologist, about urban wildlife here at Anchorage. They're more than moose and bear. Those are the ones we think about the most. You mentioned wolves. Do we have a wolf pack in Anchorage?
Yeah, we have, wolf packs tend to be fluid, but typically there's about 4 to 5 within the entire municipality. Probably the most visible is the ones that are on the Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson lands. And those are, ones that people see probably most often.
And those aren't really a hazard to humans, but maybe to pets?
Yeah, in general, wolves have caused very little conflict with people, but every year we've had at least one dog that's been eaten by a wolf. Typically, those used to be dogs that were chained up, or older dogs that were deaf or blind outside. In recent years, we did have a series of conflicts with people and dogs and wolves on the military reservation. And as a result of the increased public safety concern with those wolves in particular, we did go in and remove numerous wolves to try to stop that conflict that we felt was elevating to the point where somebody actually may get injured by these mm-hmm. animals. And since we went in there and removed those wolves, and we went in there and we killed them, And we haven't had any problems since then.
How do you feel about that part of your job, about killing wildlife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's definitely not my favorite part. Yeah. You don't ever go into wildlife conservation thinking part of my job is going to be killing wildlife. Most of what I do for killing animals is, injured moose, but we do kill bears every year, and then we did have to, kill these wolves that were causing a problem. You kind of have to look at it like, because we're not on that level, we're not dealing with individual, we're looking at the population. Mm-hmm. And my responsibility is to make sure that we conserve these wildlife populations for the future so that they're always going to be here. And part of doing that means removing individuals that are causing problems so that we can keep the ones that we have that aren't causing problems. And so it is a tough thing, but, it's just part of the job.
I think there's a perception among some members of the public that you could just tranquilize every animal and move them. But from what I understand, that's not really practical.
No. Short answer, no.
Because they just come back?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends on what you're talking, how far you're talking about moving. I mean, practicality, personnel, money. Do they come back? There's a lot of different issues. Disease transmission. There's, handling mortality. Where do you put them? There's a whole multitude of issues when you talk about translocating animals.
And you don't really do much of that, eh?
No.
Is it true that that those drugs can spoil the meat or make the meat unsafe to eat for a hunter who comes along after?
Yeah, there is a federal requirement for after, depending on what drug is used, there's a time period that it is not consumable for humans. So that's why we ear tag, all the animals that we do handle so that it's been marked somehow. With bears, we also tattoo them. But moose, we always put ear tags in them so that, I deal with a moose in town that gets tangled up in a swing set and I have to dart it to get the swing set off of its head. Mm-hmm. We put ear tags in. So if that moose gets hit by a car and ends up, a charity picking it up or it gets harvested, then they'll know they should contact us and see when was that animal tranquilized and is it within the time period. And I think it depends on the drugs, but somewhere between 30 and 45 days is pretty standard.
Mm, wow. And we're pretty much out of time, but I mean, it seems like the biggest thing people can do other than just being safe is keeping their garbage under control and keeping it indoors until the garbage day, right?
Yeah, I mean, for bear conflicts, for sure, and moose in the wintertime. I would just urge people to, this spring, especially when we're talking about bears, take a real good look around where you live, around your property, and go, is anything here a bear attractant, and what can I do personally to ensure that my neighborhood is a little bit safer and take that responsibility onto themselves?
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us today. It's been a fascinating topic and lots of interest, obviously. So my guest has been Jessie Coltrane, area biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. You can find out more about her and a lot more backup information about what we've been talking about, including those amazing photos of a moose calf being born at alaskapublic.org. And just scroll down to our topic today, urban wildlife. Next week on Hometown Alaska, I will again be the host. We'll be talking about culturally relevant education in rural Alaska and in urban Alaska, too. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.